Good morning. As Dr. Curtis said, I'm going to give you a brief summary of the post-licensure safety data that we have seen for the two licensed vaccines. First, I'm going to report the findings from a system that should be very familiar to all of you, the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System, or VAERS. This is a national post-licensure passive surveillance system for reporting vaccine adverse events. It's co-managed by the CDC and the Food and Drug Administration. And it's really an early warning system for identifying adverse events in the United States. We monitor for the known adverse events, which were found in the preclinical pre-licensure trials. It also detects previously unrecognized adverse events and generates hypotheses that require further study. It has a lot of limitations because it's a voluntary system. There could be an underreporting of events, and we don't really know how to quantify that. We often have incomplete data. There's lack of availability of denominator data, the number of doses that were given versus the number of reports that we get, and VAERS cannot assess causality. Just because an adverse event is reported does not mean that the vaccine caused the adverse event. And there are two ways that we review the VAERS reports. We look at aggregate summaries of the VAERS reports, looking for patterns of reporting or potential signals that are newly identified. And then we also look at select adverse events, typically serious adverse events. We get the medical records, and those are reviewed by a medical officer within the Immunization Safety Office. And for HPV, I've reviewed all of them. So the aggregate summary data for VAERS from the time of licensure through December 2009, the number of doses distributed during that time period was 30 million doses. The total number of VAERS reports in that time was over 15,000 reports, and a little less than 8% of those reports were considered serious, about 1,200 reports. And a serious report means that there was a death, a hospitalization, a permanent disability, or some other medically significant event. So looking at the aggregate data, the most frequently reported adverse event was syncope, vasovagal syncope. And then after that, dizziness, nausea, headache, and injection site reactions. Looking at select serious adverse events, which were confirmed by medical review, there were 50 deaths reported, and we were able to confirm 26 of those deaths. There was no clustering by cause of death, by time since vaccination, or by age. So we really can't attribute the deaths to the vaccine at this point. Of 81 reports of thromboembolic events, which include things like pulmonary embolus, deep venous thrombosis, cerebrovascular accidents, and cerebral venous sinus thrombosis, we had 57 that we could confirm. More than 70% of those had a known risk factor, predominantly use of some estrogen-containing birth control method. Of the 24 cases that did have genetic testing for one of the coagulopathy mutations, half of the cases tested did have a positive genetic test. And we did see increased reporting compared to females of the same age group who had received other vaccines. Of the 57 reports of Guillain-Barré syndrome, we could confirm 18 of those that met the Brighton case definition. There are 9 cases that are still being evaluated. Of 19 cases of pancreatitis, 12 of those were confirmed, and all of those had another risk factor for pancreatitis, things like alcohol use and obesity. And then there were 5 reports of a very unusual neurologic illness that was most similar to juvenile amyotrophic lateral sclerosis. That's Lou Gehrig's disease. Only two of those were, we could confirm, they did not really meet the criteria for juvenile ALS. They were very rapidly progressive, and both girls died within a year. And the autopsy did confirm that it had the pathologic findings similar to ALS. The other way we look at vaccine adverse events is through the Vaccine Safety Data Link Project, the VSD. This is a collaboration between CDC, the Immunization Safety Office, and eight managed care organizations in the United States. They follow a population of more than 9 million people, and all of the information on these people is kept in an electronic database. So there are a lot more advantages above the theirs. For example, we do have denominator data of number of vaccines given versus the adverse, and then we can look at the rates versus adverse events. But for very rare adverse events, 9 million might not be a large enough population to be able to find very rare adverse events. But it's a large, well-defined population. As I said, it's computerized with linkable data files, and it's very good for population studies. The VSD uses a statistical method that they call rapid cycle analysis to actively monitor vaccines while they're, as they're being used, to look for associations between the vaccine and pre-specified adverse events. And for HPV, they looked at Guillain-Barré, stroke, venous thromboembolism, appendicitis, seizures, syncope, allergic reactions, and then specifically anaphylaxis. They monitored with the rapid cycle analysis for not quite 3 years, and the total doses administered during that time for 9 to 17-year-olds was over 400,000 doses, and for 18 to 26-year-olds, almost 200,000 doses. Predominantly, 45% of these were dose 1, 32% dose 2, and 22% had dose 3. The VSD is still doing the final analyses on this data, so I can't present any of their findings. And in addition, they're doing long-term surveillance for venous thromboemboli, stroke, and Guillain-Barré syndrome. And they'll look at that until they've had 1 million doses given. Switching now to Cervarix, or HPV2, which, as Dr. Markowitz said, was licensed in the end of last year. There have only been 264 reports to VAERS, and only two of those were from the United States. So there really hasn't been a lot of uptake, or at least a lot of reporting of adverse events after Cervarix. Most of these were Cervarix alone, females in the age of 6 to 17. Looking at the aggregate data, most of the reports were things like dizziness, headache, malaise, syncope, nothing that's really too exciting. The serious adverse events, we had 3 deaths, 20 life-threatening illnesses, 54 hospitalizations, and 17 permanent disabilities. Most of these were foreign reports, which the FDA mandates that the manufacturers report foreign reports from other countries that are reported to them. But we don't have any other information on them, so we can't really do medical analysis. So I wanted to show the findings in a paper that compared adverse events from Cervarix to Gardasil, and these are the local adverse events, and you can see they're much more frequent after Cervarix than after Gardasil, and even systemic events are seen more often after Cervarix than after Gardasil. So the VAERS reports were consistent with what we saw previously and were reported in JAMA in 2009. The VSD is completing their rapid cycle analysis. We've had inadequate use of the HPV2 vaccine, Cervarix, to be able to say much about adverse events in the United States, and post-licensure monitoring of both HPV4 and HPV2 is continuing in both VAERS and VSD. And this just has some references if people are interested. Thank you.